Well, I wanted to counteract that. That's sort of the purpose of this station, and that's also the purpose of our show, is to present things that aren't presented in the mainstream media. One of the things that has popped up recently is Fox News was making comments about the issue in the country is because of hip hop, and so a couple of hip hop artists have spoken out about that.
Was that before or after the Confederate flag is a symbol of courage?
Well, that was, I guess it's all together. I'm not sure, but you'd have to ask the Fox News people. There was actually, and there is definitely a stereotype in the media that is presented when it comes to people of color. There are definite archetypes of, the way people are supposed to act, be, what kind of music certain people listen to, the kinds of things that they do, what they eat, what they wear. And those things are reiterated, but those are stereotypes. They are not true. And so today, I love music. We're getting ready for the weekend. I wanted to present two artists for you that are music artists that are new to this. Well, one group is new to the scene. The other gentleman, Shafiq Hussein, is not new. But they definitely break all stereotypes of what, hip hop artists or, just black artists are. And we're gonna open this up with a little bit of Erykah Badu's track that features Shafiq Hussein, and then you'll hear an interview with myself and Oshun. It is not edited, but I wanted, I wanted it to be raw for two reasons. One, because I recorded it on my iPhone, and I wanted to let you guys know that if you are out and you see something or hear something or want to get a recording, your iPhone is, or any cell phone, is a great way to do that. You can make your own media. So I did this on purpose. It is outside, so there's a little ambient noise. It's not very long, and I'm excited about it. So the first group, again, their name is Oshun. So, Venetia. I'm sitting here with one of the dopest groups around that I found out about, actually from OK Player, and I shared it when you put out the mixtape. I shared it all over Facebook. I am honored to be sitting here. Can you guys tell me your names?
Niambi.
Tandi.
All right, and you guys make up the group Oshun.
Yes.
So we have to educate the people sometimes. So I want to start off with, what is Oshun?
Oshun is the goddess of the river. She is a Yoruba deity. So Yoruba is like the Yoruba people in Nigeria. And so basically she's just a manifestation of what it is to be feminine and embracing your femininity and loving yourself and being love and honoring your wealth and being the diplomat. Like, it's just very Oshun is just the presence of that feminine energy.
Did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, she pretty much.
All right. So my next question for you is, what is it like being artists that use hip hop, soul, everything that really highlights sensuality in a world of the hypersexualized feminine?
Well, wait, what's the front of that?
What is it like being a group that highlights sensuality
right
in this, sort of hyper-sexualized world?
Well, Oshun is a celebration of female power, and not even just the Orisha, but literally, like, why we do the music. It's to uplift women and to highlight the jewels of being a woman, particularly a black woman, but for all people. And for us, with the knowledge we've acquired, we realize that women bring life. Women are life. Women put things into action, and that's birth. You know, we do the birthing, and in order to create life, to give life, you have to be in tune with your sensuality, because that's how you allow yourself to receive. You know what I mean? That is the mode in which women are when they are given that child, you know, when they are given that manifestation.
All right, that's really beautiful. So I guess my next thing is, somebody that's never been exposed to you and, you know, maybe interested after this, you know, snippet about what you do, how would you describe what you do, and, you know, why? Because I think every woman should be into this, but why do you think, what would encourage people maybe that are listen to a different style or a different kind of message?
Well, our message is universal, and it's not to say that it's not, it doesn't highlight a certain, you know, culture and certain, you know, traditions, but that's just our personal expression of something that is universal, which is life and, like, love. And so those things, like, people listening to us, even if they can't necessarily relate to the cultural experience, they, some part of them can relate to the spiritual experience, because, you know, that same thing exists within them. We are all part of, you know, something greater. So we just do that, are just trying to, through our music and through, you know, how we walk every day, is just be true to ourselves and practice, you know, the things that we preach in our music and the things that we, you know, preach in these interviews, just allowing ourselves to be pure in thought and action, and so that we can inspire other people to do the same. And that's not necessarily to say they should walk like us or walk in our shoes, but to say that they should walk in theirs and, you know, be confident in their power.
Wow. Do you have anything you want to add? She's like, nah, we touched it. Okay, well, thank you guys so much. I'm honored to be sitting here with you. And live radio. Well, it's not live, but a live recording. We just recorded an accident. So, we're going to keep on going and say that if you missed it, you missed a treat, because they were awesome. So I'm going to definitely give the links for the mixtape. And thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
All right. So we did record an accident. I don't know if that means I can be a witness or not, but we did happen to record one. The next artist that I'd like you to listen to for a little bit is Shafiq Hussein, and he came to Houston with, he was traveling at the time with Nicole B. And he'll give you his sort of history in the interview. Monday, 2 weeks ago, he was here at The Groove here at KPFT. So shout out to Bobby Fats and The Groove. And live on the air, he did like this amazing set, him and Nicole. It was just amazing. So I don't know if you can check the archive or if you can hit up Bobby Fats if you'd like to hear like more of his music. He brought exclusive tracks from Bilal as well as Hiatus Coyote. And let's go ahead and let's hear this interview with Shafiq Hussein. All right, so I'm here at The Groove KPFT. I just got to hear an amazing, like, amazing set. And I just want to know, for newcomers to your music, what should they know about you?
Okay, I started out as a DJ and an MC. The very first production I ever done was New Jack Hustler for the soundtrack New Jack City. I was producing under SLJ, and then with Slash the Rough Edge. By accident, producing for J5, because they're the Ox and the homies. They use my name Shafiq Hussein loosely on the production credit without checking with me. And then so when the Wax actually showed up to the house and set it on there, and then Akil from Jurassic 5 said, that's kind of cool, you should just use it, you should just keep that. So I kept it Shafiq Hussein from there. And then maybe 2 years later, the next album for which Jurassic 5, that was the very first Sarah production. Sarah, for those who aren't familiar, that's Omos Keith, Taz Arnold, myself, Shafiq Hussein. What is Sarah? Sarah is it's a production. We started out intentionally for production through, by default, of putting songs together and demoing songs for artists. Then that's how the group became a group. So a lot of people were here, like Love for Sale, Hollywood, and Sweet Sour You. Those are Sarah records first, because we demoed the songs. And then Bilal. But Bilal's album, whatever happened with the label. So now we're artists at that point now. So when it was time to put out the first Hollywood Recordings album, we just included those two songs, Hollywood and Sweet Sour You on the joint.
All right. I mean, thank you for the history lesson. That's amazing. So I guess, like, why are you not, like, a household name? And do you want to be a household name?
I'm doing my part.
I
think my mama seen me on TV already. We good.
Okay.
Yeah. She all right. Everybody gets a chance. I mean, if you want to be on TV, you don't have to do music to get on television. Some people kill 9 people and become a household name.
Absolutely.
You know. So.
Well, nah.
I hear you though. But as far as I would say, on the creative music side, meaning like production, beat making, and stuff like that, some people know me as a producer, some people know me as a beat maker, some people know me as the artist, some people know me as a songwriter. And so, depending on if it's solo, with Sarah, you know, or before Sarah and stuff like that, you know, you would have to just really do your homework and the new music that's coming out. So that's why tonight, really, I was just kind of like just throwing those things out, new things to kind of like get people reacclimated back with the sound. We just know we just got a lot of music coming out.
Well, it's absolutely amazing. And you came to Houston with
Karen B. Habibi.
Boop, 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 boop. Awesome. I mean, you guys, like, the magic that was happening before my eyes, I couldn't even believe it. How did you guys hook up? And tell us about your sound, because, you know, get Houston ready for what's to come.
Well, basically, love connects, and, like, as conductors of frequency, we connect with people who we feel their sounds too. I mean, it's like a global wildfire, like across the universe. And so to me, like, making music with Shafiq, with who, you know, I know through Sarah and his own individual product, like his own individual sound, it was just really, really exciting to make something organic and real and connect in vibe like that. So, I don't know, it's just about two, like, all of this co-production. Like, when I think of Sarah, it's like three planets coming together and ruling something. And, like, that's the thing with the collaboration, is it's always its own universe that is a whole, and then, like, the joining up of these universes is what makes these, like, wonky, like, sweet,
wavy
masterpieces that are anthems for this wonky life, you know?
Wow. All right. So I have to ask you guys, are you familiar with Desert Island?
So this next piece is a original produced by Houston Indie Media Center, and it is entitled Modern Day Slavery. You can find this piece and our show online after it's archived, and we can upload it to our Facebook. You can find it on facebook.com/Houston Indie Media Radio. So be sure to like us on Facebook. And you can also check out our older shows online. So enjoy this. Again, it's entitled Modern Day Slavery.
With the colonization of the Americas, a new class of people were created. The settlers from England had historically been disenfranchised. These individuals came to what would become the United States in order to own land, a privilege which had been reserved mainly for the gentry. However, this opportunity also came with another problem, lack of labor. Labor has been a consistent issue since the inception of the United States. It was resolved first via indentured servitude, then slavery, and a number of other nefarious strategies used by those in power. Almost from the beginning of the colonization, the target of these labor strategies have been African American people. Disenfranchisement of African Americans did not end after the Civil War. It continues to this day via the disproportionate incarceration of African Americans and their entry into legal slavery. This legal slavery occurs within the prison system, a practice which is supported and legitimized by the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution, the very amendment meant to guarantee the freedom of every person within the United States. In the United States, controlling intoxicating substances has historically been used as a way of controlling the populace. This strategy was more specifically used by those in power to control portions of the population which they deemed undesirable. During the 19th century, there were many Chinese immigrants coming to the United States. White citizens of San Francisco became uncomfortable with these immigrants. In order to criminalize the behavior of some of these immigrants, opium was made illegal in 1875. El Paso followed suit, making marijuana illegal in the face of a flood of Mexican immigrants in 1914. The fear of Mexican immigration started permeating the United States at this time. As more and more Mexican citizens fled the Mexican Revolution, these immigrants were linked with marijuana usage. This, and the exaggerated stories of the effects of marijuana, caused the public to fear a drug which it regularly consumed under the name cannabis. This resulted in the passage of the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. In 1965, Jim Crow laws were deemed unconstitutional by the Supreme Court of the United States. A mere 5 years later, the Controlled Substances Act was passed. A schedule list was created to categorize controlled substances, taking into account both the potential for abuse of the substance and its medical benefits. Schedule 1, the most restrictive category, was where marijuana was placed, despite recommendations to the contrary by the committee formed to consider the scheduling of drugs. At the time, marijuana use was strongly correlated in the minds of the populace with the civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam movement, and other dissidents. It is clear that by restricting and criminalizing marijuana, the government sought to restrict and criminalize those who used it, those who sought peace and social justice. In 1986, the Controlled Substances Act was amended by the Anti-Drug Abuse Act. This act was the first legal recognition of the distinction between powdered cocaine and crack cocaine. The distinction created was not only one of definition, but of repercussion. The intent to distribute quantity of powder cocaine was 100 times that of the intent to distribute quantities of crack form of cocaine. This disparity is somewhat suspicious. When one considers the popular association of crack usage with the African American community and the usage of powder cocaine with that of white affluent individuals, the timing is likewise suspicious, as only 3 years prior, the first federal prison was privatized. The privatization of prisons has been a problematic venture at best. Because their motivations are rooted in profit, it does not behoove corrections corporations to receive only their contract payment from the government. Instead, for-profit prisons often make use of their prisoners as labor. One of the popular images of prison labor is that of the chain gang. However, prison labor in the modern day is typically one of manufacturing. Prisoners make products such as clothing, furniture, and textbooks. For this work, they may be reimbursed from 23 cents to $1.15 per hour. Some of this wage is withheld for room and board. It has been proposed that part of the reason for-profit prisons have flourished is because globalization has put stress upon the United States economy. As the third world countries offer low manufacturing rates, U.S.-based companies have had to find new ways of competing. It seems obvious that using prison labor to become economically competitive is morally reprehensible, and many countries agree. Even the United States agreed that using prison labor is immoral when it censored China for doing the same thing in the 1990s. One of the largest costs associated with any business is employee turnover. The costs associated with training new employees are such that corporations often work to ensure that employees stay with the company through incentives. Since such incentives are not available for prisoners, correctional corporations have to instead ensure that their workforce remains imprisoned. This is accomplished primarily by inflating infractions to lower the chance of parole. One example of this practice is referenced in a story on prison farm labor. A woman known by N discussed the horrific conditions of this particular form of labor. N stated that they were 8 hours straight. The prisoners are supposed to have 2 15-minute breaks, but even those are often denied. The prisoners will run out of water and are not given more, even if requested. When making health complaints, the prisoners are often laughed at by the guards. N experienced this herself firsthand when she began to have chest pains. She stated that she did not want to continue working, and the guards not only refused to help her, but also told her that if she did not get back to work, her record would reflect an infraction, thus reducing her chance of parole. This strategy of reducing parole opportunities ensures that the correctional corporation's labor forces remain intact. Even in the public prison sector, this free labor has been exploited by prison officials and governmental agencies. In 2014, after being ordered by the Supreme Court to parole some of their nonviolent prisoners, the state of California was attempting to prevent this from occurring. The California Attorney General's office stated that paroling prisoners would be detrimental to the state's ability to fight wildfires. The motion included explicit statements such as extending 2-for-1 credits to all minimum custody inmates at this time would severely impact fire camp participation. The Attorney General's office went to indicate that if these prisoners were not available for fire camp participation, then other services such as garbage or city park crews would be impacted, implying that the governmental agencies responsible for maintaining these services could not simply hire more employees, demonstrating that they are dependent on this labor force. Perhaps no policy works better to help the correctional corporations than the three strikes laws. These laws send people to prison for life if they have engaged in felony-level criminal behavior 3 times. It should be noted that the decision to charge an individual with a felony versus a misdemeanor crime is made by the prosecuting attorney. Felony convictions are sought at higher rates when the alleged perpetrator is a person of color, highest of all if they are black. Infractions for which 3-strike laws have been invoked include stealing pizza or spare change from a car. Of course, many prisoners who are incarcerated for life without the possibility of parole, or LWOP, are those who have been imprisoned for drug-related charges. For some, this can be distributing drugs, for others, it can be involvement in a drug-oriented criminal outfit. They may have been a lookout or go-between for buyer and seller. These LWOP prisoners are the most stable of the labor force for correctional corporations, as they will never be released, are not on death row, and are often incarcerated for nonviolent crimes. Ostensibly, the purpose of prison labor is to provide prisoners with the marketable skill upon release. However, LWOP prisoners will never have the possibility of being released. So marketable skills are in actuality meaningless. In addition, convicted felons are less likely to be able to acquire a job upon release due to the number of employers who will not hire felons. This is especially hard on African American men, as African American men with no criminal record are less likely to be hired for a position than a white man with a felony conviction. For African American men with a record, acquiring gainful employment becomes next to impossible. When these men cannot find legitimate employment, criminal enterprises are often the only viable solution for them to turn to in order to support themselves. They are often arrested again within a few months of being released. In addition, one must take into account the role addiction plays on this cycle. People released from prison after receiving a felony conviction often do not have access to treatment programs. As prisons are not often drug-free environments, imprisoned addicts gain access to the drugs to which they are addicted. Thus, they are released still addicted and seek out their substance of choice. Drug offenders are twice as likely to violate their probation or parole returning them to prison. However, it has been proven that treatment of an addiction ensures that an addict is less likely to return to the tendencies which incriminated them originally. The length of time in these treatments is proportional to the rate at which they may recidivate. The longer programs tend to produce individuals less prone to imprisonment. It seems surreal that these practices are present in our society, and is only heightened with the justification of these practices written within the very amendment ratified to remove slavery as a viable form of labor. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. The juxtaposition of abolishing slavery while simultaneously maintaining it for yet another subclass is both astonishing and unsettling. That prisoners have been intended for slave labor is evident from the words of the Virginia Supreme Court when in 1871 they stated that prisoners are slaves of the state. The case has been made that prison labor is a form of legal slavery. Does it then necessarily follow that this form of slavery targets African Americans specifically and people of color more generally? To answer this question, one can look at the history of laws designed to target black people, starting with the post-Civil War black codes, continuing on to the Jim Crow laws, and finally with the war on drugs. Each of these sets of laws have been designed to specifically aim legal repercussions towards African Americans, and because racists have blurry aim, other people of color. In 2014, there were more African American men in prison on parole or on probation than there were enslaved in 1850. This startling fact is only a part of the troubling story about the rate of African American men under the control of the criminal justice system. African American men make up 46% of the prison population. African Americans in general only make up 12% of the population. This obvious disproportionate incarceration is further highlighted when one considers other statistics. The rate of African American men who were imprisoned in the year 2000 was 3,457 per 100,000, whereas white men were incarcerated at a rate of 449 per 100,000. This equates to a ratio of 7.7 black men incarcerated to every one white man incarcerated. Considering that the ratio of African American...
So if you want to hear the rest of that interview or of that piece, you can go to our Facebook at facebook.com/Houston Indie Media Radio. Before we go, I just have one announcement. I just want to remind everyone that Food Not Bombs is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 7 p.m. outside of the Houston Public Library. So Food Not Bombs is just people sharing food with other hungry people. So if you want to bring a pot of vegetarian food or just bring yourself, again, that's Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays at 8 p.m. outside the public library and Sundays at 7, and bowls and spoons are provided.
And I think we're going to go out with a little bit of music that was recorded live here in the KPFT studio with Shafiq Hussein and Karen B. and Rachel.
And as always, we want to thank everyone for sharing this 30 minutes with us, whether you're a first-time listener or a long-time listener. We do appreciate you choosing to start your weekend with us here at the Houston Independent Media Center radio show. Also, a shout-out to Jacob and V, who were driving and making magic happen behind the curtain for this radio revolution. Also, a shout out to John, who's here in spirit, even though he's not here physically with us in the studio. We're looking forward to having him back soon. And I am Rachel, signing off, reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media. Peace.
the Cohen Performance Hall at University of Houston. Certified guitar player Tommy Emmanuel live in concert. Catch this two-time Grammy nominee on November 18th for this special one-night event. Tickets for Tommy Emmanuel are available this Friday at 10 a.m. on Ticketmaster.com and in person at TDECU Stadium Ticket Office. Don't miss Tommy Emmanuel live in concert at Cohen Performance Hall at University of Houston on November 18th. KPFT, Houston.